At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Patricia Maslin, Stan Godwin and Ted Robinson of No One Likes Us Talking, who are all looking fantastic in Millwall strips from down the years in aid of course, Football Shirt Friday. Talk us through all of these different strips.
Well, this is the one for Mark McGee's promotion season. Tell me, when was that? 2001, yeah.
Straight on it.
See, I had to be a promotion shirt.
Of course. You know what I mean?
There's too many relegation
ones. Stan, what have you gone for?
No, this is the 85-86. In actual fact, Kevin Bremner, who you got coming.
He'd have worn it.
Yeah, I've got an idea he'd have worn one of them, yeah.
We'll have to ask him.
Because I like the old LDDC on it, you see. It's the Docklands. It's the Docklands connection. That's what I like.
Yeah, I can see why. And Pat, what have you gone for?
I've gone for the playoff final shirt. Nice embroidery on the front of the date and, yeah.
I'm loving this. Lots of careful thought going into all of our selections. Careful thought as well, of course, going into Neil Harris's team selections. But do you think he got it right against Aston Villa?
Well, I think it was the only way we could play. And it's been successful for us, Johnny, in the last few weeks. And it's the style that we've gone to. The only thing is, me and Pat were talking outside, I think it does lack a little bit without Ben Thompson, unfortunately, who's picked up an injury that's possibly put him out for the rest of the season, I think. But yeah, because he's a natural sort of attacking midfield player, whereas he tried to play with Jed in there, who does like to run with the ball, Jed, but he's more of a winger. You know what I mean? He's more. It's a different style of play, whereas Ben Thompson will run into space, you know what I mean, where space becomes vacant from Lee Gregory's movement. Jed's more of a player who runs at players and at people and takes them on. So we lacked a little bit going forward. But in the game itself, I thought if we'd have nicked a goal before then, which we was quite close to doing on a couple of occasions, I think it could well have been a different story. But a side like Villa, who have, what, how many, 10 on the trot? They've won now. Good side. It wasn't a bad performance. It could have been better. But, I wouldn't blame Neil and the team selection for the defeat, I've got to be honest.
See, I thought the midfield disappeared completely. I think we didn't have a midfield. Fullbacks played well. Gregory put in his usual shift. As you say, Thompson was missing. And the midfield just weren't giving Gregory any service. And I think that was how we fell down.
Do you think we're going to miss Thompson then for the rest of the season?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you will. But I saw the second half last week and I saw about the last 10 minutes of the first half, right? And I sat there, I couldn't believe what I was watching. I mean, it was absolutely appalling in my view, right? I mean, as Pat said, the midfield, Aston Villa, all what I saw that game, they were never in top gear. And it was one of those, I mean, all right, Ted said, well, if he'd have, because somebody said, well, we could have scored in the first half, and I didn't see that. I mean, and except if you score, it could have been a different game, but the reality is we didn't score. And when I watched it, and when we played in the second half, we'd still be playing now, in my opinion, never score. I mean, honestly, I saw there was Jed Wallace about 10, 15 minutes in the second half. It was the first attempt we had on goal, and he put it about 25 yards over the bar, right? And Villa were never in any doubt. They was always in control. My view is if we'd have scored, they'd have just stepped up a gear and they'd have lost the game.
Would it have been that easy?
I think so. I mean, that's my opinion. That was the worst display I've seen in a long, long time.
But when you think about that team last week, there was only three different players from the same team this time last year. Mm. We was in eighth position. So you got three different players and completely different.
I think the trouble is, I think Stan's being a bit harsh because at the end of the day...
Surely not.
Well, the results mean everything, you know, and I've seen us play worse than that and get a result, in my opinion. We got a two... we beat Derby. Was it Derby we beat or Birmingham? I'm forgetting myself. The first away performance where we got a win, we wasn't great at all, but we nicked a 1-0 win. And it could well... quite easily have been like that at Villa. But look, Villa have got some quality players. Jack Grealish should not be in that division. He should be playing for someone like Tottenham, who went for him originally.
Do you think he's that good? I mean, he's clearly a Premier League player. Are you saying he's a top-end Premier League player?
I think if Tottenham lose Eriksen, Grealish could fit in quite easily, in my opinion. I think he's that good.
Wow.
I genuinely believe he's that good
player. I would agree with that, but I think a lot will depend, right? I mean, he for a little while, he had this sort of bad boy image, didn't he? You kept seeing these pictures of him spark up.
Yeah, there were allegations of misbehaving in Spain.
And all that sort of thing. Well, I think if he gets the right manager, so for example, if he goes to Spurs, which presumably would be the favourite, and he's got Pochettino there, if he's got the right guy, then I think he would make him actually better than he is.
Their football will suit. And what I'm coming to is Villa, they're not a Tottenham by any stretch of the imaginations, but they can play that type of football.
And Dean Smith likes that
style
of play.
And Dean Smith had Brentford playing that way. And yeah, look, they did outplay us. We battled. We done a Millwall job, which was battled and battled and battled. It wasn't working. I do think this weekend, I'm sure we'll come on to the Stoke game later, but I would change things around because I can't sort of disagree about the midfield game. Is it Ryan Tunnicliffe, unfortunately, who's been playing quite well recently, done his usual thing where he just seemed to be running around not doing anything or achieving anything. Like Ryan Leonard was always doing something, but it was always the wrong thing. He'd give the ball away. Okay. He just had one of them
probably
games.
Probably the worst player on the pitch.
Well, bless him, he had one of them games where whatever he'd done, it went wrong.
Yeah.
But the only thing I like about Ryan Leonard, this seems a little bit sort of... is he never goes missing. You still see him. He's still trying. He's still...
Even if
you don't want to see him, he's in there and he's trying. But I would change it up this weekend. I think the lack of support for Gregory needs to be addressed. Where Thompson was supporting him, I don't think he's been getting that since... certainly didn't get it on Monday.
Was there a silver lining of sorts in the goalkeeping performance?
I mean, to be honest with you, Dave Martin, I always thought he was a good goalkeeper anyway. Right, but I have to say, and what I saw, if he hadn't been in goal, we'd have lost that game 5-0. That is the difference. Martin was the only, for me, was the only standout player in the game. But but the other thing is, when this season's over, right, assuming we stay up or whatever, right, but when this season is over, we cannot... I mean, the Millwall fans are not going to accept another season this sort of carrying on like next season. They just ain't going to put up with it. There's going to be ructions.
Do you think there'll be a change of manager?
Well, I think, personally, if we stay up, I don't think we will.
Okay.
Right? And that's fine by me. Obviously, my beef with Harris is not what system he plays. I don't care what his system is. You know, as long as we don't have square pegs in round holes, that's fine by me.
Style of football.
It's the style of football that does me in a division where they don't play it and you get caught out, right? But my view is if we've got three games left now, if we was to lose them three games, and as a result of that and the other lot pick up 4 points and we ended up getting relegated, then I think there's only going to be one outcome. Mm-hmm. And I hope that don't happen, but I'm just, and it probably won't do.
Neil Harris will be here whatever happens, and that's not going to happen anyway, Stan. We'll win tomorrow and it'll all be over. So
confidence here in the Love Sports studio. A quick update for you in the Premier League action. It's Liverpool 3, Huddersfield 0. Liverpool were cruising in the first half, but the first seven or so minutes of the second have actually been quite a bit of Huddersfield. They just had a goal disallowed for offside, missed a golden opportunity just a moment ago. So perhaps it's not all over yet. It's certainly not all over here on the Millwall Fan Show, because coming up, we'll be talking to former Millwall striker Kevin Bremner.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Patricia Maslin, Stan Godwin and Ted Robinson of No One Likes Us Talking. Liverpool still looking fairly comfortable. And for you three, I know you're focused on a Millwall relegation battle rather than the top end of the Premier League. But who do you think is going to lift the Premier League title?
I've got a funny feeling about the Man City game against Burnley, because Burnley beat them, I believe, last year. And I've got a sneaky feeling that Burnley are going to get a draw against Man City and they're going to hand it to Liverpool.
Really? And you think Liverpool will then carry it home?
I just got this... I don't know why, but I mean, Sean Dyche, one of our old boys, obviously, he's been a fantastic manager. And when he gets Burnley going, they become a very difficult side to beat. They've had a dodgy season this season, but the last few games against the older Chelsea boys the other night, they got a 2-2 draw. And the game before that, I think they won. They pulled themselves away from the relegation. They've had a little bit of a run. I just got a feeling that they're going to be the Burnley of last season. And it causes an upset. I'm not sure they'll beat them, but I've got a feeling they might get a draw.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's ironical at the beginning of the season, wasn't it? Burnley, as you say, weren't doing too well, and one or two people said, "Oh, well, Sean Dyche," but he's turned. You know, people keep patient, and he's turned it all round. And relegation's just not an issue.
No.
But in a way, I think Liverpool. If I had to choose between Liverpool and Man City winning, I would choose Liverpool. And I remember being up at Anfield a couple of years ago, and I was standing on the cot when they beat them 3-2. That was the season they was after it, and when Gerrard slipped over. But it was against them. And this bloke came down after the game, and he had to be about 50. This kid, this bloke was in tears. This bloke was in tears. He was convinced they were going to win it, and they blew out. And I've never forgot that bloke.
Well, I think I'd rather have Man City win it, but I've just got a horrible feeling they're gonna blow it. Unfortunately, I hope I'm wrong.
Pat, what do you reckon?
To be honest, I've got no interest in the Premiership whatsoever unless we're there.
Do you think that we could see Millwall in the Premier League in the next 5 years?
No. No. Obviously, we did go to the top flight once and that was great. And I'd like to do it again just for the youngsters' sake. But I don't think Millwall will ever be a top flight team, not
could
regularly.
Could it not happen? I mean, we've seen teams come from right at the bottom of the Football League, the likes of Swansea.
You would never, ever get a Millwall fan turn around and say, yeah, we're going to be a Premier League side.
But one day, Ted,
listen,
one day.
As the only fault in horses, one day Millwall was going to win the FA Cup. I mean, lo and behold, we got to the final once. But, you know, my daughters, bless them, have been Millwall fans all their life, obviously, as well. They're sick and tired of Wembley. I had to wait nearly 50 years to go to Wembley. You know, our glass is always half empty, not half full. We love Millwall for what they are, and they'll always be that. And that's never going to be someone in the Premier League. We'll be dizzy if we get up there. We won't know what to say to anyone.
Unless someone comes in with mega bucks and is going to buy players to get us there, but then it won't be Millwall, will it?
We would have. How many games they play for? 30-odd games of like cup finals for us that we'd be celebrating, because I wouldn't have any expectation about winning one game in a season if we was in the Premier League. Certainly not at the moment. But listen, we have to dream.
I remember when we was at a meeting once with the former chief executive Andy Ambler, and he was telling us that he was at Fulham when they went up, and he said when Fulham got promoted, he said everything changed. It all become all about money.
What the Premier's all about. Yeah. But listen, on the same breath, we're all Millwall fans, and I'd love to be sitting. I'd rather be at Anfield watching Millwall play than sitting in here with no disrespect, Johnny.
No,
but
that's
sitting
all right.
Here,
I'll just
in
go
your
home.
Pleasant company.
9:16 on a Friday night. I call that bedtime.
Yeah. But no, whoever you support, you could be supporting someone in a non-league. You always have a dream, and your dream is to see your football team play at the highest possible level that they could ever get to. So, obviously, as Millwall fans, our dream is to be in the Premier. And we're only one stage away from it. It's not impossible, you know.
We've done it last year.
We come close to it last year, yeah. So
And that weren't the first time.
No, and it is there. And one day it will happen. And
you see, now you're being positive. We talked about it for long enough. Yeah. Now you are being glass half full.
What did you say, 5 years? It's going to happen, Johnny. It's going to happen.
But for Millwall to get there, they would have to attract some really top talent, which the club seem to be struggling with at the moment. Why do you think that is?
Money.
Money, definitely money.
It always comes down to money. But the only way we can attract real quality players is we either get them as young lads that come through and we manage to hold on to them long enough to... Mm. To see, I mean, when we had our Timmy Cahills, Lucas Neal, Stephen Reid, Paul Eiffel, all came through at the same time, a little bit like the Man United scenario, but on a lesser level. But they dragged us up through the tables, and we had them together as a team long enough to see some benefit from these young players.
Do you think there's a chance of that happening again?
Well,
ever?
We've signed eight. Sorry, Stan, I was going to say, we've signed eight at the academy this year, Johnny. And whatever you think, that gives you a sort of thing, oh, we've got one or two coming through here that might well come in. But to sign eight, that's quite a lot. So there's always hope in doing that. But to attract real top quality players, the only way you do that is with money.
Well, yeah, but you see, it's funny you say that, because I've done an exercise recently. I looked at the last five teams that we played, QPR, Brentford, whatever, and I looked at the backgrounds of the players who actually played against us. I was a sub. Or they was on the field. Now, when you look at, I mean, after QPR team, for example, they come through their youth site set up, right? After Norwich team have come from Germany, one of their centre-halves who come from the second division team in Germany, right? He didn't play last week, but Amoa, the winger, right? Now, he was bought for 11 million quid. Mm. Right, when he started off, and I remember him playing for Barnet against us in 2009, and he'd only just signed for some non-league club I'd never ever heard of before, right? And each time he's got up, right, Natty Wells, whoever you look at his record of playing, right? They weren't top stars. They were coming from. They were sort of being brought from wherever, like the Harrises and all them.
Jamie Vardy.
That's exactly the point. So. But I do think we've got a problem at Millwall, because I think one of the problems we've got at Millwall is that, and it goes back once to something I heard Phil Brown say when he was doing an interview and he was talking, he was a Southend manager and he was talking about Millwall and Neil Harris, right? And he was saying, he said, all the players I've ever spoken to that have played for Millwall, he said, all of them tell you to play for Millwall, you've got to have a certain mentality. Mm. If you haven't got that, it don't matter how good you are, he said, if they haven't got the mentality, he said, that ain't going to happen. Mm. And he said, so when Neil Harris, because he was obviously the manager, he said, when Neil Harris goes for a player, he apart from whether he's any good or not, he wants to know whether he's got the mentality. Because if he can't handle it, if he ain't got it mentally, it's going to be... Yeah, and that's a problem.
But even so, Stan, it doesn't matter who the manager is, they don't get it right every time.
No.
Not every player fits in. But the people always look at it in the wrong way as well. It's not about how much you pay for a player. It's about how much that player's going to get when he comes to the club, his wages, which is where we obviously fall down a bit compared to a lot of the other clubs in our division.
And if you were to get that money, it would require a big investment. And Pat, you were suggesting earlier that, in your words, that wouldn't be Millwall. Would you accept an investment of that kind?
Well, it all depends. I mean, if you get, say, an Arab team coming with mega bucks, it's not going to be the same type of club. It's not going to feel the same type of club. And I think you'll lose a lot of the core supporters because it would be unrecognisable. I don't know. It's balance, isn't it? Do you want the club traditionally, what you've always known, the local people supporting, or do you want to try for the top spot? Do you want to... mega bucks. I mean, a lot of the teams, they spend and don't achieve.
Well, what I think Pat's point, and I totally agree, is we're a working class club. We're working class fans. Mm. Let me tell you something. If we could afford Paul Pogba and he come and played for Millwall, he wouldn't last two games, I'm telling you. The way that guy strolls around on a football pitch as if he owns the place and whatever, not doing anything, in my opinion, for the money that he's being paid, It's not his fault, by the way. Somebody somewhere believes in him. And
well, it's his agent's fault. But Mino Raiola.
As fans, we just would not put up with that.
No.
Millwall would destroy that, man, if he came to that. Honestly.
I tell you what, though. I mean, a guy read an interesting thing the other day on Twitter from a guy. He's a Millwall fan. And he made that comparison between ourselves and Brentford. And he said that Brentford and Millwall are about the same sort of size club. Right.
I saw you retweet that.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And he made the point, right, about this. You know, they've got about two or three players in, and they paid £1.5 million and a couple of million for fine. But what he's saying is, well, if they can do it and they get less against than we do, how is it we can't do it?
Mm.
Now, I mean, I don't know what the wages are. You'll never know that. But I wouldn't imagine, and I'm not having to cover at Brentford, I wouldn't imagine they're paying them the earth.
No, it's probably more about the recruitment structure.
Yeah.
A note on Ted's point about Paul Pogba. He's walked for 64% of the time he spent on a Premier League pitch this season. If he tried that at Millwall, I doubt it would go down very well.
He wouldn't walk very far. Straight down a tunnel and away.
You need a bit more scrap, a bit more bottle. And one man who had that is Kevin Bremner, former Millwall striker. He'll be up next.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, Patricia Maslin, Stan Godwin and Ted Robinson of No One Likes Us talking. A quick Premier League update. Liverpool 4, Huddersfield 0. Sadio Mane with his second-headed goal of the evening. And the Reds looking very, very comfortable.
And not many of them are getting outside, neither. They're strolling around that Liverpool side. Aren't they?
Sadio Mane, I'm not having him.
No, not having him.
One man who knew a thing or two about scoring goals in his day was Kevin Bremner, former Millwall striker. And I'm delighted to say he joins us on the line now. Evening, Kevin, thanks ever so much for joining us. The big question, of course, are Millwall staying up?
Of course they are. no doubt about it.
You never in doubt, Kevin.
We did it to 1983 when we were 10 points adrift from the safe club and we stayed up.
That's very true.
Jordan's great escape. Neil's going to do it this time.
Kev, we was just talking. I mean, I was just making the point, and I'm sure you know this being an ex-Millwall player, that us as Millwall fans, what we expect is 110% effort week in, week out, and seeing that in the play. You, Kev, I've got to tell you, definitely fell in that class. But I wouldn't say anything different to you, mate. But but no, you knew when you was out there, you was putting people under pressure, running about. But do you think today there's a lot of footballers that just seem to go out there and stroll around? Because it does look like that to me.
When I played in the 80s, it was one of them where you wouldn't be tired not to score. You were hot. Yep. I can remember Steve Walsh when he was at Wigan. He went on to play as old centre half at Leicester. He absolutely murdered me with a tackle in the last couple of minutes. and I got up and said, "Come on, what's the best you can do? I'm in for an easy game today." And I was in absolute agony, but I couldn't have been that bad because I still scored 2 goals.
Yeah. Well, I just think that's another point without the football, like from our generation, Kev, is that, you know, you see some of these players strolling around, you think yourself, I would love to be able to arrange a game with people from the 80s and 70s playing against the players today, allow to play how you want it to play, because there would certainly be a few of them flying up in the air, I'm sure.
Well, it would be fair tackles, remember?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, because it's also worth pointing out, Kevin, I mean, the pitches you played on in your day compared to the carpets we got today, one of my boys, when he sees, like, when they rerun the big match and he comes in one day and he saw the pitch, he couldn't believe they was attempting to play football on it. I mean, he just couldn't get his head around it.
Yeah, I mean, the groundsman, I had a 3-year spell at Brighton, and the groundsman there said, the furrows that you take up in this pitch, he says, gives me half a job and a half rather than just one job.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely bowling greens to play on there.
Coming back to the relegation thing, Kev, like you say, you was 10 points behind. How do you get that sort of mentality to get you out of them problems? What do you have to do? You bond together as a team and stick together? Is that the main thing?
I mean, if you can go back to to George Graham. George Graham had everybody known what they were doing, when they were doing it, and how they were doing it. Everybody was singing from the same hymn sheet. And he said, I can always remember somebody telling me, he says, when George came in, he says, he said to the players that were there, right, you've got 6 weeks to do it the way I want it, or I'll take in players that will do it the way I want. So the 6 weeks were up, and all of a sudden players started coming in. I came in, Stevie Lubbock came in, Davy Stride came in, Peter Wells came in, Anton Lukowski came in, Dave Kuzak came in. Who else was that? There was about nine players from the original team. I think there was only Dean Neal and Nicky Chatterton left out of the starting 11, I think. And George got rid of everybody. Right, do it my way. And he took us away to Bisham Abbey for a weekend and drummed in what he wanted. And from that weekend, we lost one game. And that was away at Oxford, 1-0 or 2-1, I think it was. And Oxford went up as champions that year.
Yeah, did you? I mean, obviously, he had an effect upon you, George Graham, Kev. Like, did you really think at any time that he would go on and achieve what he did, like with Arsenal, when he moved on?
He's always going to do something like that. But the success he had at Arsenal was again built on the way he wanted to play, the philosophy he had between him and Terry. He was very much influenced by Terry Venables. Because he was youth team coach at QPR when Venables was over there, and they all probably played the same way. And it was just one of them. It's like anything else, defenders defend first. And then and they've got time to play football, they play football.
Hi, Kev, it's Pat.
How you doing?
Hello. Can you tell us your best memory of playing for the Lions?
So many.
Must be a promotion.
Probably the best one. When I first joined Millwall in February 83, there was 2,300 people at the game, and we played Exeter. We won 4-2 or 5-2, I think. I didn't score. Dean Neal scored a hat trick. The presence that George had and the players that he brought in. Mm-hmm. 15, 16 games later, two games to go, we've got Brentford at home. We'd been on a great run. We had to beat Brentford still to have a chance of staying up. And there was 9,000 people at the Old Den. The atmosphere was absolutely electric. Even with 2,000 people in, the atmosphere at the Old Den was electric. But with 9,000 people there, I don't know where the other 7,000 came from, but everybody
at the pub, probably.
I had a big pub.
Kevin, the big question, of course, for Millwall right now is that upcoming fixture against Stoke. How do you see it going in terms of score prediction?
How long's a piece of string? Anything can happen in 90 minutes.
You got no idea at all.
Who would have said that Everton would have turned Man United over 4-0 after the run that Man United's been on?
No, it's a very good point, but we'll have to hope, I think, at least, for a Millwall win. Kevin, so nice to speak to you. Thank you ever so much for joining us. Kevin Bremner there, who's the former Millwall striker, who had so many good memories of his time at the club that he almost couldn't think of his very favourite. A quick update from you. From the Premier League action, still Liverpool 4, Huddersfield 0. We've just seen Oxlade-Chamberlain enter the field of play for the first time in a very long time. He's done very well with that return from injury. And a reminder that you can enter No One Likes Us Talking's Guess the Gate competition at Nolu Talking on Twitter. It's live. Just enter on that page and you could win a couple of No One Likes Us Talking mementos, or you can send your guest directly to the guys at No One Likes Us Talking and they will ensure that you're entered. Coming up, it's our favourite part of the show. It's the fan in the dugout.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and I'm delighted to say it's time for Fan in the Dugout. Our fan this week is James Kelly. James, the rules are simple. You can make three changes from the team that lost 1-0 to Villa. It didn't go to plan last week, but what can Harris do to make it go absolutely perfectly against Stoke?
Good evening, first of all. I don't know, really. I think it was just a match that I didn't expect us to win. It was Villa, obviously, they're chasing promotion. I don't know, really. I think maybe see how we get on with Stoke, this team. I think they are very capable of beating Stoke tomorrow. I would like to see a bit more of Ferguson. I do feel that he has a lot to offer in the team. Maybe Marshall could possibly come on as an impact sub. I hope. Obviously, keeping Dave Martin in goal was pivotal for the Villa on Monday, because he pretty much kept us in it. So, and I would maybe even see three strikers up top to put them to the sword and potentially, you know, get a win and see us have another season in the Championship would be my.
James Teddy, I personally, whether he does this new or not, I don't know. But having seen the way we played on Monday and whatever, I generally think, Gregory, it's time now to give him a bit of support up there. So I would actually go back for this game, a game we got to win, to our 4-4-2 system. I'd bring Steve Morrison back in. I would actually bring Sean Williams back into the middle of the park. I would keep Ben Marshall in, and I would actually move Sean Ferguson to left back, which is normally Neil's sort of substitution that he does at any time. Well, not that James Meredith's been doing anything wrong, but I think the two best crossers of the ball that we've got in our club is Sean Ferguson and Ben Marshall. And I would get them out there from the word go, and I want to see a proper old Millwall performance where we just go at them from the word go, get ourselves in front, and I'm sure we'll be able to hold on from there. Because this division is all about getting the first goal, to be quite honest, a lot of the time. But I think Sean Williams' ability with his range of passing we need. I would probably keep Ryan Leonard in alongside him, even though he had a bit of a nightmare against Villa, and put Ryan Tunnicliffe on the bench. I'd have Jed Wide one side, I'd have Ben Marshall the other side, and have Stevie Morrison and Lee Gregory up the middle and go for it. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think this season overall, Meredith's been seen as a bit of a scapegoat. I mean, what we've got to remember is that he had a brilliant season last year, didn't really get a lot of rest, and then had to go straight to the World Cup with Australia. But then this season, he hasn't shown the level that he can produce. We all know he's a brilliant player. So I do feel that he has been a bit hard done by this season.
I was going to say, I think he's been better the last few games, Meredith. I wouldn't be dropping him for his performance. I just think he hasn't got the delivery that Shane Ferguson has. Like, Shane takes the corners and whatever. And also, Ben Marshall, when Ben actually does go out wide and gets the ball across, he is one of the best, well, if not the best crosser, I think. So I would keep them two in.
I completely agree. With Ferguson, the start of the season, I was expecting him to be, you know, shipped out on loan or even sold in January. But to fair play to him, he's come in and done absolute wonders this season, and he's up there for Player of the Year for sure. So I would consider obviously keeping both of those two in. Ben Marshall is the one that I've got a bit of 50-50 on, and obviously Leonard, these things happen, but I do expect him to be a very important part of our team next season. You know, so keep him in and see what he can do tomorrow.
Yeah, I think the thing is, James, I mean, I don't know what it is with Ben Marshall, but he, I mean, we signed him, didn't we, in January this year, and it was exactly the same from the previous year. And for one reason or the other, this time he's not performed. Now, I don't know why that is. I mean, you could be tempted to say, well, he didn't get a lot of game time at Norwich, but then saying that, when he was at Wolves, he didn't get a lot of game time there, but for some reason he's just not been firing. And but he's a good player. I read the other day they seem to think that if Norwich get promoted, which they probably will do automatically, they you know, the view is, well, Marshall won't, if he can't get in their team now, he certainly won't get in here in the Premier League, and therefore they're talking about signing for £1.5 million.
Yeah, of course. Like, I you don't have to be the most knowledgeable Mill fan in the world to know that this time around Ben Marshall hasn't had quite the impact that he did last year.
Mm.
In fact, I'd even go as far as to say that he was probably the second most important signing we made last year after Cahill. When coming into the second half of the season, we went on that incredible run and, you know, the playoffs. But this season, I do feel that, you know, his lack of game time at Norwich has probably done his confidence a bit of bad. And it's kind of, you know, brought him back down to earth, and, you know, he's trying to find his feet again. As you say, he's a great footballer, and he's very important to us. I would like to see him, you know, succeed with us, and I would hopefully, you know, like to see him come on and make a massive impact tomorrow like he did last season.
What would you think about putting Steve Morrison back up front with Lee Gregory, James?
I'm one of the biggest Steve Morrison fans in all of Millwall, really. I love him a bit. He's bleeds the club. He knows what it takes to be a player for the club. But
I just think he's understanding with Lee Gregory is the best front pairing that we've got.
And I
just think, you know, Steve's leadership tomorrow could be a big asset as well.
Yeah. I do like the... I don't know. He's getting on a bit. It's not, you know, beating around the bush. But I don't know. Maybe a bit of an unpopular opinion, but potentially see O'Brien start, you know, see what he can do. Because he does have those games where he can, you know, get inside and, you know, create something out of nothing.
Yeah, I mean, Ted makes the point about Steve, and I can understand the logic of that. The only thing that concerns me with it, I mean, if he starts tomorrow, him and Gregory up front, I mean, the chances are, notwithstanding any injuries, I mean, you know, Morrison ain't going to last a full 90 minutes. Now, and if he's going to take him off, you've then got a decision to make, ain't you? You can either play O'Brien, put him on, or if that's not the case, I think what he would probably do, personally, I think he'd probably take him off and put Tom Elliott on.
Let's hope not.
Well, that's the choices he's got.
I mean, I'm just saying, but the reason I say that is because he's a like-for-like player, and he's a tall player and all that sort of thing. That's the reason I'm saying it.
Absolutely.
James,
a target man, exactly. And the biggest question of all is how the game will go. If you had to give a score prediction, what would you go for?
Oh, well, I'm actually going tomorrow, so that's a test. But heart says 2-0 to Millwall, but my head says 1-1 draw. I'm going
to
say.
Okay, so on aggregate, it's a 2-1 win to Millwall. Everybody's happy. James, thanks ever so much for joining us. James Kelly there, Millwall fan, and of course, our fan in the dugout this week. If you want to be fan in the dugout, you can do so. You can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Call in 0208 70 20 558. We'll get you all booked in. And a quick Premier League update for you. It's Liverpool 5, Huddersfield 0. It's not polite. And the reason why I laugh there is that I've just been informed by my producer and have now seen on the pitch with my own two eyes. Unfortunately, the sides have been playing for the last 20 minutes with a dead pigeon on the pitch. Hopefully, it will be removed very, very shortly. No dead pigeons here on the Millwall Fan Show. And coming up...
He's defending better than some of them Huddersfield players.
He is. They should get him in at centre-half, shouldn't they, Ted? Coming up, it's time for the opposition view.
This is Love Sport.
That's right. It's that time of the show when we turn our attention to Millwall's next opponents. This week it is, of course, Stoke City, and I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Martin Spinks, who is a Stoke City reporter for the Stoke Sentinel. Good evening, Martin. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Are you confident ahead of the weekend?
No.
Good.
You're very popular in here, Martin.
Well done, Martin.
It's been that kind of season, really. And I don't really know what to expect from Stoke. Obviously, we know what to expect from Millwall. We know what they need. Stoke, if they play like they did in the second half against Norwich on Monday, then Millwall might have problems. But there's certainly no guarantee of that. They've been so inconsistent, to say the least. So I don't know what to expect, and I've been watching them all season.
And so you've not had a lot to report on, really, Martin, have you, the way they've been playing? But it must be disappointing as a Stoke man, because I genuinely believe that they had players there of Premiership class in some of them, and they just don't seem to have performed at all this season.
Well, I think most people on the outside of Stoke at the start of the season were certainly having them down in the top two, if not to win the league.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we were a bit more sober at this end. Maybe that was just general caution. But even the most pessimistic were thinking, well, we'll at least be challenging for the top six, if not in the top six. So to be sat, well, 16th in the table, but effectively 17th because of the Birmingham points deduction, just tells you what a miserable season it's been. And that's followed on a miserable couple of years. So you can tell from my voice, it's been pretty depressing viewing for the most part.
What about the new... You've got the new manager in there now, haven't you? Nathan Jones, who was quite... Well, pretty sensational with Luton, wasn't he? So was you pleased about him? Because obviously he lacks a bit of experience, but for a side like Stoke, if you know what I mean, or a club like Stoke. But is there signs that he's turning it?
Yeah. Small signs, but he can't be judged at this stage. I mean, his record on paper isn't that good since he came here, 3 wins. But he needs to bring in his own players. He's inherited one heck of a problem. And once he's got some of his own players in and the pre-season behind him, then I think it's fair to start judging him from next season at the earliest. But he found it tough, and I think he'd admit it's even a bigger job than he thought it was. But what he does bring, I hope he hasn't lost it, is a winning mentality, because as you say, he's had 2 great years at Luton. Looks like they're going to get successive promotions, and he deserves more plaudits for that than anybody there, I would think, even though he's left the club. So he does bring that winning mentality, and he keeps saying that he's not used to losing games, he's not used to teams not his teams not scoring. But he's had to get used to it over the last 2 or 3 months here at Stoke. But I say, I hope it hasn't infected him as much as it's infected the rest of us.
Martin, I mean, Stoke's been a bit of a strange case for me, because in the sense that, you know, they come down, they got Gary Rowett in, who, you know, by everyone's standards was considered to be an half decent manager. Everyone was outraged with him, what happened at Birmingham, and, you know, and when you look what's happened at Birmingham since, I mean, you know, what was said about him was absolutely right. I mean, they ruined the club there. But is it, I mean, like, you see, sometimes I wonder, when you get teams that and supporters, they get into the Premier League, right, and they're in there for a while, and then, you know, they, and I'm not saying that if Millwall was up there, it wouldn't be any different, right? But they get there for a while, and then they come down, and there's this, you know, there's this expectation that, well, you know, we're going to be back the next season. And when it don't quite work out like that, for whatever reason, people start getting the ache and start going balmy. You know, is it a case of possibly expectations were too high at the beginning of the season? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
well, as it's turned out, they haven't quite gone balmy, but they've certainly got the hump, and understandably so. As you say, Garrett Rowett seemed a very sensible appointment. Not a Premier League manager, so they weren't getting ideas above the station. They got somebody in who knew the Championship, and it seemed as though the signings he made were Championship stroke Premier League players who could get the team up, and he just didn't gel. I mean, we'd need all night to explain why, but in a sentence or two, basically they suddenly started leaking goals left, right and centre at the start of the season, particularly at home. So he had to stiffen the defence up, and he went perhaps too far the other way, and then they suddenly couldn't score goals. And the football wasn't great. There was even a 10-match unbeaten run in the autumn wasn't pleasing the fans. And then when he hit the buffers over Christmas, some really shocking performances and results. He got no goodwill to lean on, and the fans were against him. And the board, unlike 12 months earlier, when they dallied over the sacking of Mark Hughes, they took swift action to get rid of
Should never
Gary
dally over the sacking of Mark Hughes at any club.
Well, that comment comes from somewhere now. Where could that be?
I couldn't possibly comment.
This guy McLean, how's he playing, and is he likely to be playing tomorrow? Do you know?
Yes, he will be. How's he playing? The fans have never really taken to him, like a lot of Gary Rowett signings. And, of course, he brings a bit of extra baggage with his political and religious comments, as we all know.
Yeah.
This manager likes him. I don't know whether he sees him as a long-term viable option, but certainly likes what he's done in the last 2 or 3 months, because James McLean's a trier. He'll run all day. He hasn't got the greatest ability in the world. He'd probably acknowledge that himself, but he is a trier. And Stoke have gone through this transformation where a few years ago we wanted more than just tries, having been in the Premier League 5-6 years. We wanted the cream, and those came in the shape of Arnautovic, Shaqiri, Bojan, who's still here. But now it's turned full circle, and I think people are almost saying we're going back to the year dot. Let's get a team of tries in with one or two gilt-edged players. to sort of flavour it up a bit, but we really need a team of tries, and we're hoping and we believe we've got a manager that will do that. Time will tell, of course. And James McLean is his sort of player. Whether he's good enough going forward, I'm still not convinced.
But he does scrap.
Done business for the manager this season.
Absolutely. Martin, the biggest question of all is how it will go tomorrow. If I had to press you for a score prediction, what would you say?
Well, in the paper, I've gone for 1-1 because I never predict Stoke to lose in the paper. But if you're asking me to put money on it, I fancy 1-0 or 2-0 to Millwall.
Oh, you're a very good
player. Martin, you sounded very sensible from the word go, mate. Yeah. You sound like you know your stuff.
When push comes to shove, and we know what it can, or I know what it can be like at Millwall, you need it more than Stoke do, and I think on the day that will count. The fans will obviously be up for it, won't they? The home fans.
Absolutely.
So I think it'll be a bit too much for Stoke on the day.
Well, Martin, you're a very popular man in the studio. Thank you very much for your time. Martin Spinks there, Stoke City reporter for the Stoke Sentinel. Do you share his, well, I suppose for him it's pessimism, for you it's optimism. Do you think Millwall are going to win this game?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, they've definitely got to be up for it, and they've got to be up for it from the moment the referee blows the whistle, and they're going to have to go at it full pelt because they can't afford to mess around. And, you know, people are going to be, I mean, they're going to be behind them, but they're also going to be on edge and all, you know.
See, that's what worries me. Once the crowd get on their back, if they're not playing well, it could go like last week.
I know what you mean, Beck, because that's what happened with Brentford. But I think tomorrow, and I think Neil's right, I've sort of seen little hints in what he's been saying this week, Stoke are still classed as a big side because they came down last year as a Premier side. So I think he's trying to G the boys up to get them to approach it a bit like the FA Cup games that we've played with your Everton's and in the past. So I fully expect them to come out roaring tomorrow the word go. And, you know, you can't say it enough. We've got it in our own hands here. We only need that win tomorrow. And with the goal difference we got, then that means we're safe.
You might be safe with a point tomorrow.
If we match what Rotherham do tomorrow, but obviously Rotherham are playing after us. But if we draw and Rotherham draw, then because our goal difference, Johnny, as you know, is so much 50. Better than it. It's like another point.
If you think about it, I mean, you know, Rotherham, they're going to West Brom tomorrow. Who are in the playoffs? I know they're going to.
And then it's Middlesbrough.
And consolidate that. Then they got Middlesbrough. So they're playing two teams in effect that have got something to play for. Possibly in our case. Right, the only one that's possibly got anything to play for would be Bristol City because they're in. I don't know. They're in the shout of the playoffs.
Yeah, because
right?
Wigan on the last day aren't going to be fast.
Wigan are out of it now, aren't they? So
they'll have their flip flops on.
That's right. But so it might well be that on paper, right? They, you know, and as you say, by this time tomorrow night, well, we could all be down the pub and everyone's happy. Like,
well,
you know,
we'll be.
Everyone's a
it's
winner.
It's just a shame that most of our defeats this season have been by the odd goal.
Yeah.
Do you think if Martin had been in at the start of the season, we'd be in this position?
Well, you say that, Pat, but like I was saying, in some way, that's been our saviour. That we've only lost by the odd goal. Rotherham seem to have lost by, you know, been a bit thumped here and there because their goal difference is so bad. Whereas it's been good, it's actually sort of saving us at this moment in time. But listen, whatever happens tomorrow, I'll be down a pub anyway. Win or lose, have a
Dave Martin. I mean, Dave Martin. I mean, I remember when he used to play for MK Dons. Used to watch him, and he was always a competent goalkeeper. You watch him now. I mean, and what I like about him, he gets the ball, and he's looking to release it quickly, but he ain't looking to lump it. He's got runners. He gives it to
him. You know what, Stan? Someone said to me the other day, and I don't think you can sum him up any better. Than this. This was at the end of the Villa games I was walking out. They can't say, that Dave Martin, he just does his job. And I think that's a perfect way a keeper should be.
Yeah.
That is all you want him to do. But I know we always come back to the mistake he made against Brighton could have finished off a lot of goalkeepers down at Mill. Back to what we were saying earlier about got to have that sort of mentality. He's obviously got it. I'm for one over the moon that he's been performing the way he's been performing. I'm sure he will. And I hope he gets a contract.
But after that mistake, he came on Twitter, he apologised to the fans.
Yeah.
He understands the club, which, you know, is great.
Listen, he should be there next year. Yeah. Whatever the other goalkeeper is, I mean, whether it's Jordan Archer disappears or Ben Amos goes or comes back, Dave Martin should be there, whether he's our number one or whether he'd be an ideal backup anyway if we go and get another goalkeeper. But hopefully this time tomorrow, we can all rest easy.
Well, my view would be if I was in charge.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.